WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Astronomer Carl Sagan died today after fighting bone marrow disease for 2 years. Through his public TV programs and his books, Carl Sagan explained difficult concepts about science and astronomy to millions of Americans. In 1980, his series Cosmos became the most watched limited series in the history of public television. Sagan consulted to NASA on the Mariner, Viking, and Voyager planetary expeditions. In 1982, he was part of a small group of scientists who hypothesized that a nuclear war could have a catastrophic chilling effect on Earth that could end civilization as we know it. They described the scenario as nuclear winter. Sagan had little patience for pseudoscience and superstitions, which he debunked in his most recent book, The Demon-Haunted World. I spoke with him last May after its publication. He had a bone marrow transplant the year before and was feeling good and optimistic when we spoke. I asked if he found himself relying on faith in science or religious faith during the periods he was very ill.
What saved me first of all, the cutting edge of medical science.
Mm-hmm.
As my wife Annie said, I was riding the crest of medical research in the sense that had I gotten this disease just 3 or 4 years early, I would probably be dead. So it certainly underscored for me the personal importance of scientific research. And then secondly is the loving care of my family, especially Annie, who in many ways, both metaphorical and literal, saved my life. So that's what I think about in thinking back on my illness. And no, I never had a near-death experience. I was never tempted to abandon skepticism and believe something without adequate evidence just because I was in emotional need.
So where do you turn for answers to those nagging questions like, what is life about? What am I doing here?
I have a tolerance for ambiguity. It's clear to me that there are some questions that humans don't have the answers to, and what arrogance to imagine that we have answers to all questions. See, science is sometimes, I know, attacked for supposed arrogance. But I think it's the most humble occupation and discipline around. Because instead of trying to impose our preconceptions, our predispositions on the universe, we are open before the universe to see what the universe has to offer. Science is in the business of finding out what's true, to the extent humans are capable of that. Whereas a lot of these other disciplines are in the business of pretending that what feels good is true.
Do you think that science and religion are compatible?
It depends very much on how you view the arena of religion. If I look at the Bible, I see, especially in the King James translation, great literature, great poetry. I see some powerful ethical and moral prescriptions, including the importance of charity. I also see some dreadful stuff, including mass murder of whole people with God cheering one side on. I see rituals and a sense of community, a lot of things that are really terrific, and I'm absolutely for them, and it's hard to see how science could be opposed. But the Bible is not a work of science. The science in the Bible was taken by the Jews from the best scientists of 600 BC during the Babylonian captivity of the Jews. But we've learned a lot of science since. So mainstream Roman Catholics and Reformed Jews and most of the mainstream Protestant denominations have no difficulty at all with evolution of human beings from other animals, an Earth that's 4.6 billion years old, the Big Bang, and so on. But on the other hand, if you are a biblical literalist, then you have problems on the boundaries of science and religion.
Are you a religious man yourself?
I think it's impossible to be a scientist and to confront, even occasionally, the grandeur, subtlety, elegance, and magnificence of the universe without feeling a sense of reverence and awe. But that's very different from concluding that there's a God who issues punishments and rewards after you're dead, or that prayer works, or that the Bible is written by anybody but fallible human beings.
So that means that you have, that you're in awe of the universe, that there's something, what, something larger than any of us, but you wouldn't define it as God.
First of all, you can be religious without believing in God. Mm-hmm. Buddhists are certainly religious without having any notion of God. Secondly, the word God, it's amazing how diverse the definitions are. Let me give two extremes. One is the sort of God that I gathered by osmosis during my childhood, which is an outsized white male with a long white beard who sits on a throne in the sky and tallies the fall of every sparrow. Now, that kind of anthropocentric God, there is, as far as I can tell, no compelling evidence for at all, none. At the other extreme, there's the kind of God that Einstein and Spinoza talked about, not too different from the sum total of the laws of nature. Now, there are laws of nature, and not only that, they apply everywhere to a quasar 10 billion light years away as to the eastern seaboard of the United States. And it's a very remarkable fact that the same laws do apply so generally. It could have been that a different set of laws applies in every county. So that kind of God, of course, exists. Who would deny that there are laws of nature? So I claim you learn absolutely nothing about someone's belief if you ask them, do you believe in God, and they say yes or no. You have to specify which of the countless kinds of God you have in mind. I don't myself like to use the word in that context because it doesn't illuminate at all. If I say I believe in God, or if I say I don't believe in God, and I say no more, you've learned nothing about what my belief system is.
Carl Sagan, recorded last May. He died today of bone marrow disease at the age of 62.